Good evening, this is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My guest tonight is science writer Alex Morris, and we're talking about her new book, A Year with the Seals, Unlocking the Secrets of the Sea's Most Charismatic and Controversial Creatures. Alex, welcome to the show. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
Thanks for having me, Mark. It's great to be here.
This is a really fascinating book. How did you come to focus on seals?
That is a great question. It certainly is not something that I was expecting to do too far before I actually began the project, but I see seals fairly frequently these days. I live in mid-coast Maine and kind of see them just hauled out on rocks and beaches where I live. But I think for me, it was really the controversy that drew me to the story and made me think that there's actually a book here. And so I mention in the book as well, but several years ago, a swimmer here in Maine was tragically killed by a great white shark just off the coast of Bailey Island in Harpswell. And it was just the first confirmed fatal shark attack in Maine's history. And so it really just rocked the community. And I remember how shocked I was at the time. But I think that in response to the attack, I was sort of anticipating this backlash towards sharks, and instead, the focus really in the media and kind of in the public too seemed to be around seals and this idea that there was this overpopulation and exploding populations of seals along the coast, and that's really what was luring the sharks to near shore waters. And so I think that was sort of when I became first aware that there was a controversy. And then the more I dug into it, the more I realized that, oh, it's not just kind of swimmers and surfers and beachgoers who are concerned about rising seal numbers, but also a number of fishermen who are seeing seals or perceiving seals as competing with them over kind of limited catch or impacting their fishing gear in some way. And so I think that was kind of what made me think that there's really a story here to dig into. And then the more I learned about seals, the more fascinated I became.
I know people who have only sort of, especially from inland areas, not on the coast, who only have thought about seals or seen seals in nature documentaries, or who long to see seals because they're so cute, are probably not familiar about how serious these controversies are about the seal populations. And you get into that all in your book. But I want to start with the 1972 Marine Mammal Protection Act, because it's the results of that that we're dealing with seal populations at all.
Right, exactly.
Talk about what that was.
Sure. So, yeah, seals back in the early 1970s when that federal protection was put into place, seal populations were almost non-existent in New England and really U.S. waters. And the reason for that is that seals used to be quite prevalent here. I mean, there's evidence of seals dating back 1,000 years from the bones that have been discovered in these shell middens. And so there's a long history of seals in this area. But in the 19th and 20th century, there were these state-sponsored bounty hunts that were really the core aim was to just eliminate seals in order to protect fisheries. And so seals were really, gray and harbor seals are the two kind of resident seal populations in the Northeast. And they were really just completely annihilated during that time. And so by the early 1970s, they had almost disappeared. I think there was a small population of harbor seals that remained, but gray seals, I think, had nearly disappeared from the water. So they were, when they passed the Marine Mammal Protection Act, the hope was that by putting those protections in place that would prevent the harassment and killing of seal populations and all other marine mammals, that these populations would begin to come back. And sure enough, over the past 5 decades or so, gray and harbor seals really have sort of reemerged in these waters and come back to kind of recolonize their former range. So it definitely is a success story from an ecological perspective, but certainly there are some communities that are a little bit less enthused. And of course, some that are overjoyed to find seals kind of back in these waters.
Well, I've seen a lot of seals in my life, but I'm old enough that I remember the returns of the gray seal, especially, which we never saw, especially on Cape Cod. I took these early seal tours of Nauset Beach. Yeah. And it was amazing how big they were. They're very different from the harbor seals, which are always very cute. But the impact the people had, that the seals had, especially, I want to think, you travel to the Northwest to various indigenous peoples there who made their living, their life blood, were returning populations of steelhead and salmon. Seals factored into that problem.
Yeah, absolutely. So the West Coast research that I did for my book, that was not something that I was actually initially intending to do. But I realized as I was digging into the East Coast story that there was almost this parallel story that was playing out on the West Coast. And so I traveled out to kind of Seattle and Tacoma to see what the story was out there. And out west, it's really kind of increasing kind of a similar parallel story with state-sponsored bounty hunts that killed off populations. On the West Coast, it's really California and stellar sea lions, in addition to Pacific harbor seals. But again, with the Marine Mammal Protection Act, those populations began to come back. And so now they too are thriving in the Pacific Northwest. And one of the people who I spoke to when I traveled out there was Ramona Bennett, who's a tribal elder with the Puyallup tribe. And she, I can say kind of bluntly, is not a fan of seals and sea lions in any way. And certainly I think salmon is so foundational to their, it's a traditional food resource. It's a part of their culture and their identity. And I think when the seals and sea lions began to come back, they also began preying on the salmon. And so out west, there are a number of dams that were constructed. And so there are these fish ladders that are kind of adjacent to the dams. And so you can kind of imagine that there are these salmon and steelhead trout that are funneling into this tiny little entrance in the fish ladder in order to return to spawn in the kind of estuaries in which they were born. And when they kind of get to these little funnel areas, there are seals and sea lions that have learned about this. And so they kind of appear at these areas or even just the mouth of a river and just start picking off the fish. They're elated because they found this kind of all you could say. But certainly it has had a very significant impact on the fish populations out west. And that impacts actually not just some of the native fishing tribes and native communities, but also commercial and recreational fishermen, and but also other species. And so one example is killer whales. The resident killer whale population is fully reliant on Chinook salmon. And so when those populations are impacted, then that can have a detrimental impact on those killer whales as well. But I think the challenge is that seals and sea lions are one part of a much larger problem that's impacting these salmon, these fish populations. And so it's sort of, I wish it could be as simple as just saying, okay, well, it's the seals or sea lions. But of course, there are so many other factors, including just the infrastructure that's in place and the fact that these dams exist and kind of funnel the fish in that way.
That's one of the things I think that I got out of your book is nothing is that simple. Things, and especially when we're dealing with ocean ecology, there's a lot of complex elements to it, much of which we can't easily study because it's under the water. And that's true for seals. And they're smart. You have a story. I think you were on Nauset Beach in Cape Cod. We were talking about seals and fishermen. And one of these surf sort of guys that are casting for fish, he finally caught a striper. And as he was reeling it in, seals were like zeroing in on the fish. And I know, I'm sure he was really PO'd. But,
oh, yes.
But it was hilarious to read about.
Oh, God. Yeah, the very colorful language that was coming.
I'm sure. I'm sure. my God.
But yes, no, he was not pleased. But it was so fascinating because that you know, when I was kind of walking down the beach and seeing these surf casters, I mean, there were at least half a dozen men who were kind of positioned just along this sandbar. And there was just one seal. I mean, I didn't see any others. It was just this one male gray seal, enormous. I mean, gray seals are twice the size of harbor seals, so they're really quite large. And it was just sort of swimming back and forth. So it would see that there was a little bit of action on the end of one line, and it would just jet over to where that was. So it was just this battle between the fishermen and this particular seal to see who can reel it in first.
Oh,
and
my God.
Yeah, so it was quite a scene.
And I apologize for laughing to any of you in the audience who are surfcasters. And I totally get that. But wow. I mean, these seals are very clever. You're listening to WISN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. My guest tonight is science writer Alex Morris, and we're talking about her book. It's a fascinating read, A Year with the Seals, Unlocking the Secrets of the Sea's Most Charismatic and Controversial Creatures. Alex, I think we should digress just for a moment and talk about seals as mammals. Talk about the group of mammals known as seals and how they break down. Because when you were talking about the sea lions on the West Coast, that's a very different kind of seal than the harbor seal.
Right, exactly. So, yeah, seals are part of the or pinnipeds. And so it's seals, sea lions, which includes the fur seals, and walrus. And so seals, there are over 30 species of kind of what they call true seals. And so that would be the gray and harbor seals here on the East Coast. There are two resident species. We don't have any sea lions or fur seals. That would be on the West Coast. But there are two resident species of seals, which are gray and harbor seals. But we do also get occasional visitors, mm-hmm. you might have come across. And that would be ring seals and very occasionally hooded seals and harp seals. Ring seals are actually pretty uncommon, but they have been spotted in these waters. But yeah, so the kind of breeding populations are harbor seals and gray seals. And harbor seals, I think more than 90% of them are breeding and kind of giving birth off the coast of Maine. And then some of those seals will then kind of travel further south along the eastern seaboard, maybe as far south as North Carolina in some cases, during the year to kind of fish and forage, and then we'll come back to Maine to give birth. And for gray seals, the largest breeding colonies are off the coast of Massachusetts, and those are Monomoy and Muskeget are kind of the two largest breeding colonies there. Yeah.
Now, is the feeling that the gray seals return to Massachusetts from the colonies up in Sable Island?
Yes, exactly. So one of the kind of questions was, I mean, this is very interesting. They said that just kind of the latest research indicates that there are about 28,000 gray seals that are breeding off just in the U.S. waters. And so that's kind of in all of the different breeding colonies, including some of the islands and areas in Maine and certainly Massachusetts. But that compares to, there's this island off the coast of...
This is one of my favorite parts of your book, by the way. Because I knew about this island, but I didn't know anybody that ever had been there. So I want you to, let's take this one piece. It's not easy to get to.
It is not easy to get to.
And you decided to go there in winter?
Right. Well, so that's the really fascinating thing, is when I started my research, it was during the fall, and gray seals will breed in the winter. And so between December and February, the seals will kind of haul out of the water, and they'll kind of congregate in these large colonies in different areas. So that was kind of the breeding colonies I was mentioning. And for about 3 weeks, the mothers will give birth and then nurse their pups intensively for about 3 weeks. And then they will then leave leave their pups kind of cold turkey separation and return to the sea, because during that 3-week process, they've transferred about half their body weight to their pups through this like high fat milk. And so the pups then survive off of that milk and kind of that's their reserves. And but the mothers are just, they look like deflated balloons. I mean, they are starving. And so they need to get back to the water to feed. And in the meantime, there are the males that have essentially just biding their time. They kind of have circulated, that just positioned themselves in the perimeter of these colonies, waiting for the females to try and kind of get back to the water. And that's their opportunity to mate before the females return. So it is quite a scene. But yes, Sable Island is the largest breading colony of gray seals in the entire world. And so, you know, we have 28,000 that are breeding in U.S. waters. But on this tiny island, which has no trees, it's just this bit of like a big sandbar in the middle of the North Atlantic, there are 400,000 gray seals that will haul out every winter onto this tiny island. I mean, they are everywhere. So I had read about this island, and I knew that the seals that were breeding there, I mean, some of those seals are the ones that kind of came south and essentially immigrated to the U.S. waters and then started to recolonize some of the breeding colonies here. But I was so determined to get to this island and just kind of reading about it. I mean, it's such a wild place, and there are wild horses on the island, and nobody knows exactly how they got there, but there's kind of this feral horse population. And so it just is a crazy place. And there's a number of researchers that go out and kind of study the seals. And so it's run by the Canadian government, by Parks Canada. And I was just trying to kind of nicely harass the Canadian officials trying to get myself to this island. And because they don't typically allow members of the public to get out there, it's just very challenging to get to, particularly in the winter. And kind of dealing with the winter weather up in Nova Scotia is its own battle. But I managed to get out there, and it was just the most incredible, incredible place. Well, so yeah, it was great. You knew about the island too.
Your description of winter on Sable Island is amazing. First of all, it sounds like the wind is a huge issue.
Oh yeah, the wind was deafening. I mean, we were supposed to take a plane. They have this kind of twin propeller planes that will go out, and the runway is just the beach. I mean, again, this is a big sandbar, so they just kind of fly in and land right on the beach there. But there had been these winter storms, and the beach was underwater. So we ended up having to take a helicopter. I've never been on a helicopter before, so this was quite exhilarating. Oh, and so, yeah, but as soon as you step off onto this helipad that they have there on the island, I mean, it just, you can't hear anything. The wind is so wild and just kind of whipping. And then you have the sounds of these seals. I mean, hundreds of thousands of seals on the island, and gray seals have this very kind of haunting, just almost spooky sound. And, you know, you think of, people talk about sirens with sailors that are kind of going past these islands and hearing these sirens and the kind of spooky, haunting wails.
Wow.
And then, of course, people think that that was actually seals. So, yeah, it was really incredible.
The visual spectacle sounded amazing, because these gray seals are just huge. Everybody's used to these harbor seals, which are sort of, you know, cute and sort of about the right size you want a seal. But
right,
when you get
right
to a gray seal, it's a big seal, and they're just all over the beach. I mean, the way you described it, it was a once in a lifetime kind of spectacle.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I'm sort of hoping that they will start doing some kind of public trips during the winter, because it is, yeah, it's truly a sight to behold. Like you said, I mean, gray seal, the males can weigh up to 900 pounds. And so these are really massive creatures. And so seeing them kind of battle over territory and just go after each other, and the females are actually the ones that you need to be a little bit more concerned about, because they are so protective of their pups. And so in some cases, we had to kind of get between these groups of seals, and it was definitely, I think for me, a little bit alarming when you get within striking distance, of some of the seals, because they will try to defend their pups.
Now, understandably. One of the, there's many interesting points to your book, but one of the real interesting points is that you spent time with rescue organizations, people who dedicate themselves to rescuing marine mammals and then returning them to the wild, like the Marine Mammals of Maine, and there's another organization on the West Coast, which I just can't remember right now. But these people are doing incredible work, and oftentimes it doesn't work out.
Yeah, I guess I sort of had this idea in my head when I first connected with the team at Marine Mammals of Maine, that most of their stories were going to be quite happy. They were going to be coming across these seals. And so they have the largest seal rehab center in the Northeast. And so they really get just a large number, particularly during the harbor seal pupping season, because that's often when it's a very different dynamic where, as we mentioned, the gray seals are kind of in these large colonies and the mothers are right there with the pups during that feeding process. But for harbor seals, the mothers will give birth to a pup, but the pup is able, because they shed their lanugo or their kind of, you know, coat, their fur coat, in utero, when they're born, they actually already have their seal skin, so they can swim within kind of minutes to hours of being born. They can't go very far, so they can't kind of join the mothers on these fishing trips. So the mothers will typically leave their pup behind on the beach or on, you know, a rocky ledge where they were born, and the pups will cry out, and that's how the mothers know where to find them, because they have that kind of unique vocalization. But I think what's difficult is that when people are, and also because harbor seals are born typically kind of beginning in April and then running through, say, July, definitely overlapping with humans on the beach. And so you can imagine just kind of walking down the beach and coming across this adorable newborn seal pup, and it's all by itself, and it's crying out, and you must think, you know, this seal pup is in trouble, or it's hurt, or whatever, and what should I do? And so the biggest challenge that Marine Mammals of Maine faces, and I think a lot of kind of seal rehab groups that are kind of working with harbor seal populations, is well-intentioned, well-meaning beachgoers who are trying to kind of help the seals, but unfortunately doing all the wrong things. And so there were so many cases where they would talk to me about kind of people picking up the seal and trying to put it into the water, but actually that seal needs to stay on land to rest, or they would cover it with kelp, or they would actually bring it back home with them and put it in their bathtub, which is just the absolute worst thing you can do. And so really, you know, when they helped educate me and certainly have spread this message of, if you do come across a harbor seal pup, or really, you know, any seal pup in that way, to if you're worried that it's in distress, to call the local marine mammal kind of support hotline. That there's typically a rescue organization that's responsible for whatever kind of beach area that you're on, and they can help. You can send them pictures and kind of talk them through what you're seeing, and then they will go out and take a look. And oftentimes the seal is completely fine, and the best thing you can do is just kind of leave it alone so that the mother can come back. But yeah, that was always really, I think that was kind of the trickiest thing. I figured their biggest challenges would be, you know, have sharks and seals and kind of fishery conflicts and things like that. But it really was just kind of dealing with trying to educate beachgoers.
There's a lot of weird stories in your book, including, and we're not going to be able to talk about them on the interview, talking seals. And that I had no knowledge of, and that was totally freaking weird.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, it was so bad. I mean, kind of early on in my research, I came across this story of...
Don't talk about it. Make people read the book.
Okay, right. So there's a great story in the book that you should definitely read about.
I had no idea. I had no idea. I want to talk about the fact that you write several times in the book that that this story about seals is really the stories of about humans, that these conflicts that are going on with seals and fish and sharks really reveal a lot about the people who are talking about them. And that was one of the big takeaways from your book.
Yeah, I think that was sort of another thing that really drew me to this topic. Is I realized, so in my kind of just professional background, have studied a lot of human-wildlife conflict, and particularly around recovering species. I mean, what happens with these conservation measures that we put in place that were really effective? And it's this wonderful kind of recovery story of different wildlife populations, but of course that can also lead to rising conflicts with humans. And how do we learn to kind of share space with species whose populations are increasing? And I saw the seal story as sort of this microcosm of kind of some of these larger conflicts. I mean, you think about the return of gray wolves in the West. And sea otters in Alaska, and you know, it just is certainly a story about seals, but yes, as you said, it's also just a story about humans and the conflicts that can occur between groups of humans with competing interests in our oceans. And so, and just sort of learning about kind of that story and trying to understand the different perspectives of people who both love seals and also have been negatively impacted by rising seal numbers, to try to just have empathy for kind of where people are coming from as we move forward and figure this out.
We're completely out of time. There's so much more to talk about this book. My guest tonight is science writer Alex Morris, and we're talking about her new book, A Year with the Seals, Unlocking the Secrets of the Sea's Most Charismatic and Controversial Creatures. Alex, it's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much, Mark. It was wonderful talking to you.
You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. Good night.